evening. Wanted and unwanted animals in the house on Shabbos. Okay, so there are several.
Or anytime.
Well, the anytime questions are, there's what to cover. There is, and part of this year was taken from, as well, you see, source number 6 is, there's an article that Rabbi Howard Jachter had. They put out, I guess, I don't know, called Torah, was in the Contemporary of Halacha, I think the law, that book, the RGJ Journal, I think he had an article all about pet stuff. Some of it are the Shabbos issues, and some of it are other issues as well, that aren't necessarily first, like starting with, are you allowed to have a pet? About what you're allowed to feed pets, and what to do about a Pesach, and about Pesach pet issues, and neutering pets. All right, so one can follow this link and find an entire article having to do with all, not necessarily all you ever wanted to know about pets, but probably more than you wish you knew about pets. But this is only Hilchos Shabbos issues. So we're going to cover tonight, one is the big one, the Muksa issue. That's going to get Shelly very upset. And then there is the Eruv. What if there's no Eruv around? What do we do then? We're going to talk about the idea of trapping pets that you do want to have around. And then the idea of trapping animals that perhaps you don't want around. So there, that would qualify us for our title of Wanted Unwanted Animals in the House on Shabbos. Or, I mean, I should have added an Or Sukkah on Shabbos. Okay, so the Mishnah actually has two major halachos. The first one is for the first couple of lines, and the second one is for a little bit later on. So the first one is Kofenes Hasal Lifnei Hayefrochim Kadesh Yalu V'Yardu. So the Mishnah tells us that you're allowed to turn over a basket so that birds can like climb on it, so they can get in and out of their coop. So what would possibly be the problem with that? So the Gemara tells us that there's a problem of taking a vessel, at least according to the Sun Tanaim, of taking a vessel and making it muksa. I mean, if something started the Shabbos as not being muksa, now by you doing something with it, you're going to make it muksa. So that's a problem, right? So to take a vessel and put it under something that's going to catch the wax, something like that, so that could be a problem, because now you're going to be causing something to be muksa. So the Gemara says that, why is that okay? Why is this okay to put something that's going to hold the birds? This is because that the birds are climbing on and getting off, and they're as soon as they're, you know, once they're gone, they're gone. So you're not taking an object and making it muksa for the rest of the Shabbos. You're thinking, it's going to be muksa for 5 seconds until the bird hops off. The Gemara has this.
It's muksa because.
Oh, so the Gemara continues on and says, well, hold on, and while discussing this issue, it becomes clear that the Gemara has an understanding of animals being muksa. The animals themselves are considered muksa. That's the basis of this halacha. Meaning, otherwise, why would it be an issue about whether the animal is on the thing or not? Right? It must be that animals themselves are considered muksa. Right? Why would animals be considered muksa? So the Magen Mishnah tells us here, because uperish ha'afrochim, and well, you skip the first half, right? And it says period, it says, and he explains what's going on here. The Rambam quotes this halacha. You're allowed to turn it over. Why are you allowed to turn it for this reason? Uperish ha'afrochim b'shum behim machai v'ov chayim einan mutarim b'tiltul l'fi she'einan ru'uyim. That animals are not permitted to be moved because they have no use. There's no use for animals over the course of Shabbos. And yes, so we have to feed them. All of that is seemingly for the purpose of the animal, not necessarily for our purpose. So if it's not for our purpose, so then the animal would therefore qualify as muksa. Hold on. I sense it already. Hold on. So Tosfos asks Shelley's question and says, what do you mean that there's no use for it over the course of Shabbos? There's plenty used for animals. We'll give you one example. So Tosfos here says, explains by Rav Yosef, well, it's a very good use for an animal, because you can use an animal to quiet a baby when the baby is crying. Now, don't try this in my house, because that will only increase the crying. But one can think of various situations where a child would be comforted by coming in contact with the animal. So that sounds like a pretty good use for an animal over the course of Shabbos. So Tosfos says, well, yeah, but that can't be that's the halacha. Rather, the underline at the end of it, elavade bali chayim muksin heim kegrogros vitzimukin. Rather, what does it mean that they're muksa? They're muksa like pits and peels and pits. They're muksa like things that really have no use over the course of Shabbos. So what's going on here? So there's actually two types of muksa. Rav Schechter, in his shiur that he gave at LMS about a month and a half ago, explained this very beautifully. That there are certain things that are muksa because they are total, there's absolutely no use for them, like rocks or like sand or like things like that, that there's no use for them at all. No, and they're not kalim, they're not vessels, they're not whatever. So those are considered totally muksa, right? You're not really allowed to move them, pick them up at all over the course of Shabbos. A very rare, certainly you'd be allowed to pick them up. And then there's other things that we call kalim shemalachtan l'isser. There are things that vessels that are normally used for prohibited usages. So something like that would be a hammer. The classic example of that is a hammer, right? I could pick up a hammer, right? Hammers are generally used to bang in nails and to build buildings, right? So I'm not allowed to bang in nails or build buildings over the course of Shabbos, so I'm not allowed to pick up a hammer. However, but a hammer is a kli, a hammer is a vessel. So if I could think of a good use for a hammer, the Gemara gives the example of crack a nut, right? That's the example of the Gemara, right? I could think of a good use for the hammer, so I'm allowed to pick up the hammer, right? But I would not be allowed to pick up a rock to crack a nut, right? A rock is what you call muksa mamish, it's completely muksa, right? While these vessels are considered klisha malachtan le'isr, but if I could think of a permissible use for them, then I'd be allowed to use them.
It'd be a special rock that you only use to crack a nut.
Right, so if I marked it off beforehand, right, as Rav Schechter used the example in the shir, right, those people that think it's a good idea on Shabbos to throw rocks at people driving cars, right, it's muksa, how can you throw rocks at somebody throwing cars? They said, no, if you mark it, put a stripe on it beforehand, you know, l'shem chavod Shabbos, right, so then it's no longer muksa. I do think so.
They
prepare
it.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean do they mark it?
Well, those they prepare.
Is that your question?
I think, does this stuff really go on anymore? I haven't heard of this in a long time. I don't know.
I'm not sure.
The last time I had rocks thrown at me. No. Anyways.
I'd rather not.
So the Tosfos might be having the following debate. Right, in the original thing, when it says, well, I have a good use for an animal on Shabbos, the good use for an animal is to quiet a baby. So what are we talking about then? Right, we're talking about, you know, generally we're not allowed to do it, but if I have a good use for it, then I'd be allowed to use it. That puts in the klisha malachto, the iser category. But then Tosos concludes by saying, no, they're considered like grogros vitzimukim. They're considered like pits. They're considered like things that mamish have no use, which we consider totally muksa. Meaning even if there's a good use for it, I wouldn't be permitted to use it. So that seems to be the halacha in Tosos. That seems to be the halacha in Shulchan Aruch. In Shulchan Aruch it says, you're not allowed to move an animal. Chayav of, right? Asu l'tal to behema chayav of. Afal pikein mutter l'chafus esasalif mehai frochim. Theory, you're allowed to cover up a basket because so the birds not to get in, Kadesha Yadu Vyurdubo. Sorry, you're allowed to turn over baskets that the birds will climb on, it's that they'll go on and come off. Odamalav Asul Tadalav. Still on the basket, not allowed to use it. Once they get off, you're allowed to use the basket. Okay. So that's the halacha that we've been dealing with. So we've talked about so far regular animals, right? And talked about even animals that seem to be owned by people. That seems to be what Tosis is talking about. So the question came up in the last decades or so, is that what about pets? Pets might not be the same thing as what Tosfos is talking about, right? In Tosfos' day, people owned animals, but they didn't own pets. The purpose of the animals were to milk or to scare or to do all those different things. So perhaps a pet might be the equivalent of putting a stripe on a rock before you throw it, right? This is set aside for my personal enjoyment over the course of Shabbos. So does that change anything? I think in the biography of Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, so it tells the story that when he came to America, his whole story about how he was supposed to be fundraising, and then he realized that the organization he was working for cheated somebody, so he quit the organization right away, and now he was left in America without any family, without any money. So he got a job. I think his first job was in Seattle. He tells the story how he had to schlep across the country on a train to Seattle. I think it was like over Sukkot or something like that. And he ended up in who knows where, like Montana or something. And he looked up in the phone book. He didn't know a word of English. He somehow looked up on the phone book under rabbi. He called up a rabbi. He went to the rabbi. The rabbi picked him up. The rabbi was not Orthodox rabbi. He didn't realize that originally. And then he gets to the rabbi's house, and he's greeted by a dog. And it's like the first time he ever encountered like a Jew owning a dog. Like, he didn't compute. Like, what in the world is going on here? So that's a new thing. So the question was asked to Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe has a tshuva in the books here. He talks about fish, right? What about picking up a fish tank on Shabbos? Right, akliim dugim ketanim shenasu lenoyu lekeshet abayis. That they're done. They're, you know, they're. It's a friend of mine. You say I'm never going to allow pets, but fish are like you know, movable wallpaper. So we'll have fish maybe. So that's what Moshe says. Let's say you have fish in order to like make the house nicer. So he says it's still aser. Why? The bali chayim muksin heim af b'chay gavna. That even muksin in these circumstances, heim kagrogus v'tzimukim. They're like totally muksa, as it says explicitly in Tosfos. And even picking up the vessel would be a problem because it's what we call a bas. It's holding up the muksa. That's also called in the Hilchos Muksa book. So in the back he has tshuvas from Rav Moshe. So he has an explicit tshuva from Rav Moshe about this, about pets. Where he says the same thing as he said in the written shu. Bali chayim havalei muksa. Afilo otan shatinokos mesachma. Even the one that the children play with, so they're considered muksa. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach entertains the topic and also concludes that it's muksa. So we're left with not too many people on our side. So in that article, he in Rabbi Jaffe's article, so he quotes, I don't know who this is, a Shul Shalos Shuvas Meirosh Surim, he concludes his discussion with Ishmael's citation of the opinion of Aaron Lichtenstein. And he says, it is proper to conduct himself in accordance with the stringent opinion in this matter, since this appears to be the opinion of Tosfos Mordechai Goes Ashri in the Rosh. Meaning, one looks at those we show, right? Tosfos, as we saw, entertains it and then rejected it. The Mordechai also entertains it and then rejects it. The other two I didn't look inside. But yet one need not admonish those who practice in accordance with the lenient opinion in this matter, since the issue is embroiled in a dispute amongst the Rishonim, and the logic of those who are lenient is compelling. Which I think he's saying, sounds like it really should be. Sounds like it really should be okay, right? It's an animal that was set aside for a human's enjoyment over Shabbos. He's like afraid, you know. They got some pretty heavy guns on the other side. So therefore, that's my psak. I don't admonish anybody who practices in accordance with the lenient opinion on this matter. But it's proper to avoid muksa, to like. You cut up and play with them, so that I would suggest that that's the proper thing. I personally don't really pick them up myself ever, but you know, that's how I would instruct. I mean, to pick up an animal over the course of Yontif or Shabbos and Yontif, I would think is one should avoid doing.
So the isser is just on picking them up. It's not on playing with them or feeding them or even.
Right, so feeding them, I meant to include a little thing on that. I had that in mind. Feeding
the
them, we assume.
The here is really what we're,
yeah, so yeah, feeding yeah. is assuming it's under your responsibility as mutter. If it's not under your responsibility, it's not mutter, which is why tashlich is a big issue. I did not want to go there tonight, but that is why many suggest that the idea of feeding bread to animals over the course of tashlich is not a recommended practice. There are those that say no. There are those that say no. It's part of the minhag. It's minhag hakamonim, etc. I'm not sure. If you look in old sources of tashlich, you're going to be hard pressed to find any mention of people throwing bread in. Right? Some suggest that it's like an American custom that in order to get their kids to come, they say, "Hi, we're going to go feed the ducks." Feed the fish, and are going to feed the ducks as well. It's not in Shulchan Aruch. It's not in the Mishnah Berurah, the idea of feeding the bread out. So people do it. Also, you know, there are those that defend the practice. People raise the question as well with Shabbos Shira, putting the bread out for the birds in Shabbos Shira. They're not your birds. They're someone else's birds. They're not your responsibility. So why should you be going and feeding them? So one answer is, well, you don't. You just put it out before Shabbos. It's not an issue. I'm not sure if that's the minute. The minute might be put out on Shabbos. I don't know. Because people are very upset about the practice. So it sounds like the practice is to put it out Shabbos morning. Otherwise, I'm not sure what the issue would be.
Well, there's less of an issue anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but there are also some suggest, no, what do you mean? We have to give a karos hatov to the birds. We owe them a thank you. So what do you mean? We mm-hmm. I don't know. Most of these practices are recommended to be avoided. But again, there are those that defend all of them. So it's hard for me to say usher and etc. Okay? Mishnah Berurah adds in one more halacha about touching the animals. The Mishnah Berurah adds in, however, that if the animal is in pain, I got my first animal shiloh, not from Shelley, recently, that someone told me that their animal had broken their arm on on Shabbos, and could they do anything with it? I said, well, you could do whatever you want to make it better, but you can't like drive it to the hospital. Like that's not allowed. But if it needs to be held, you know, the rules of muksa do fall away. The rules of muksa do fall away in the face of Tzar Baal HaChaim. That's pretty much an explicit Gemara. The Gemara itself talks about like an animal falls into the river, and are you allowed to take things and drop it into the river so that the animal would be able to climb out? And the Gemara says, what are you doing? Aren't you violating muksa on behalf of the animal? And the Gemara responds by saying, yeah, but it's Tzar Baal HaChaim, and Tzar Baal HaChaim might be an issue d'oraisa, a biblical issue, so you're going to violate a din d'rabbanan in order to save yourself a din d'oraisa. So the Gemara seems to say that. It's not so clear that Tzar Baal HaChaim is an issue d'oraisa, though. So that's why the Gemara seems to be concluding that way, but the Mishnah Berurah does imply that that's permissible. I mean, to touch an animal, to violate muksa, if the animal is in pain and needs some kind of, I don't think just hugging it, but it needs actually some type of help, so then the prohibition of muksa would fall away in favor of Tzar Baal HaChaim.
So, so
the Gemara we're going to have here someplace. Oh, that was actually that first Mishnah. Tarnagolos shabarcha dochenosa achetichanes. If an animal falls away, it can be pushed. You see, even with the hands, it can be pushed in until it goes and re-enters where it's supposed to enter. So that seems to imply right. Touching, even touching a car is not the aser on children. People leaning on cars looks terrible. It looks so bad. But then you're not moving the car. So it sounds like it should be okay. Right. So don't touch cars if you know the alarm's going
to
go off.
So if you're carrying something, your Talit bag, you can leave it on the trunk.
What?
If you need to pick something else, you can leave it. Use it as a table.
Use
the trunk, the top of the trunk.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the animal. Okay, yes. Yes. Right.
Yeah, so really this thing about if they run away and you're gonna push them to be in the right place. Again, it's a well-being kind of thing. You're trying to do something to keep them.
Well, that Mishnah is really part of the tzad, the trapping portion of the shir. I put it in there as one Mishnah.
But you could also say that it kind of could connect with this whole business of trying to help the animal if they're
we'll see. Right. Right. That's right. Correct. Correct. Why are you allowed to walk a dog on Shabbos? Because we assume that it's for the benefit of the animal, right? As we're going to see. That's the trapping issue.
Okay.
So we'll get to why you're allowed to walk an animal in a few minutes, but just outside the Eruv has its own issues. It seemed like I put in the wrong. No. Right. So first of all, outside of an Eruv. So the first thing that that the Mishnah Berurah mentions is that this would apply to something that is requiring of your help. Meaning a para, you would not be allowed to put anything around it, not because you'd be carrying, but because the animal would be carrying. Right? The Daf Yomi just went through about 10 pages, six or seven dafim, discussing the prohibitions of an animal carrying a giant animal. The Kiddush we say every Shabbos, as well as the Aseret Dibros, right? It concludes by saying, right, the animals that are in your sharm. So, what work are your animals doing? What is that talking about? So the Gemara says, you know, that have an animal just carry things around. An animal's not supposed to walk outside of an ear with things on top of it. So the Gemara has six pages trying to figure out what would be considered carrying for an animal. So it says here that the Mishnah Berurah is saying that for a cow or something that goes wherever you want it to go without a leash, you wouldn't be allowed to put a leash on a cow. But other things that would require a leash, you would be allowed to put a leash on it. However, things that don't always go where you want it to go, you'd be allowed to put a leash on it. So the Shulchan Aruch says there are a couple of rules and regulations with regard to the leash. Number one, Hamotzi behem v'humoshcha ba'afsar. You're carrying an animal and it has a leash on it. tzarech li zahir shelo yetzei rosh hachevel mitoch yado tefach lamata. That, right, when you're holding a rope, so there's two ends to the rope. There's the rope that attaches to the animal, and the other rope that's coming out the other end of your hand. So it says one thing that you should make sure is that you're not carrying it more than a tefach out of the end of your hand. Right, so I don't know if you know if you have a handle, it's not really an issue. But if you're carrying it on a rope, so you shouldn't have the rope hanging down more than 4 inches or so. Why? Because it looks like you're carrying a rope. I mean, somebody could look at it and say, like, oh, that looks odd. Why is the person carrying a rope? So let's not have him do that. The dummy commission knows so biyadav lo mischazi ba'asar behemah. They're not going to see the leash going out the other end. They're only going to see one side of the hand that you're holding the rope. Begam also lo yaniach harbi minachevel lebein yadu lebehem. This is a little bit more difficult to do. That you shouldn't have so much slack that the rope goes within a tefach of the ground. It doesn't droop to within a tefach of the ground. And if it's too long, you should like quickly wrap it around your hand so that it quickly is that there'll be less and less slack. Okay, so that's important. The problem is if you're really going to totally direct an animal to everywhere you want it to go, that might be a problem of trapping, as we'll see shortly. Okay, but those are the two gezeiros. One sifra shulchan aruch with regard, not really gezeiros, but two rules with regards to the leash. Right, number one is it can't come out of your hand too far, and B is it can't have too much slack such that anybody watching you is going to say like, hey, why is the guy holding a rope? And they're not going to see that there's an animal at the other end. All right. So that comes up every once in a while following hurricanes or whatever, when our ear is down and animals still need to be walked. Next. Okay, so
this carrying by the animals, does that apply pretty much to domestic animals that are normally used for work? For example, I don't know, a dog would have a house with a leash.
Without a leash. What do you mean? With a leash. So that's, so we assume that's carrying, that's for its own protection. I mean, an animal would be allowed to walk around with horseshoes, right?
It's not doing a job for you.
Right, if it's for its own benefit. So, but the animals also tachshits. Tachshitim aren't allowed for animals either. Yeah.
So it seems like some of the Rishonim say that you shouldn't have a pet. But now there's a rule that says, oh, when you walk your dog, you can do it this way.
Right.
You can do it that way.
So you're not touching it, though. Right? You just don't, you're not allowed to pick it up.
Okay.
And you're not allowed to force it to go someplace it doesn't want to go. That's what we're about to do. Okay, yeah.
What about a dog in the wintertime that you put a coat on a dog? Is that considered
a dog? Yeah, the Gemara talks about that.
Is it really?
Yeah, Rabbi, I told him the Dak Yomi Shir, Rabbi David Moshe Weinberger, I listened to his Shir recently, where he commented that when his father got to America, I forget all three of them, but he there are two things that he saw his first Shabbos that he'll never forget. Number one is he walked into Shul and he saw people sitting and learning in chairs. He said it was the first time he ever saw people learning in chairs. Before that, he had only seen people learning in benches. It's wild. I thought that was wild. The second thing he saw is that he saw an animal with a coat. He said in Europe, the people couldn't afford coats. In America, the dogs are walking around with coats. I think the official line was, in Europe, the people had clothing and the animals had nothing. In America, the dogs were clothing and the people were nothing. That was the official line. But the Gemara itself actually mentions the idea of an animal that is wearing something for its own heat, for its own warmth. Yeah. Okay, so tzvi shenichnas labayis v'nal echad b'fanov chayiv. Nal u'shnayim p'turim. So the Mishnah tells us that if you have a deer that goes into a house and somebody closes the door, well, it says before it, but really behind it, meaning it closes, well, not sure. It closes the door so the animal stuck in the house, so the person is chayiv. What are they? Chayiv? Chayiv means that he's violated the biblical prohibition of tzad, the biblical prohibition of trapping over the course of Shabbos. So nal u'shnayim p'turim. If two people close it, and they're both potter, because both of them are doing the action together. Okay, but what you see here that there's certainly an issue of trapping animals over the course of Shabbos. The second half of the Mishnah that we quoted in source number one, however, talked about directing chickens in. Right? So how do you decide? Right? It says, oh, you're allowed to take a chicken, you're allowed to shove it, you know, kind of, you're allowed to nudge it into so it goes where it's supposed to go. So why are you allowed to nudge chickens, but you're not allowed to trap deer? What's the difference between the two of them? So the distinction between the two is one is something that's what we call mechusar tzedan, something that's lacking trapped, the deer has not been trapped, and it's something that is normally trapped, meaning if you want to go ahead and capture a deer, or you want to shech the deer, you want to have venison, the only way to do it is you got to trap it, then you got to somehow, you know, it's a pretty serious thing, and something that lends itself to this kind of thing, right? That's how you would trap it, by doing that. However, the chicken, you assume, is going to go wherever you want it to go, meaning it's domesticated, it has a home, it's something that comes where it's supposed to go, so to nudge it in where you want it to go, so he said that would be okay. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Chayva of shebir shuso mutter litzodan. If you have an animal or a bird that's in your rishus, you're allowed to trap them. V'husha lo yimrodu, as long as you're not like forcing them. As long as they're not rebelling, as long as they're not forcing their way back. About imhe mordim, if they're like being rebellious, aser letafson afilu b'chatzir. You're not even allowed to grab them in the chatzir. Machatzir gadlu shim lo gadlu bein bnei adam hayitzrichim betzuda. That if the if it's a big chatzer, you're not allowed to capture the yuvim in the chatzer. If it's a big chatzer, shim lo gadlu bein bnei adam hayutzrichim mitzuda. That if it wasn't with people, it would still require capturing, right? So you would not be allowed to do it. Okay, so you're not allowed if it's being rebellious, you're not allowed to do it. So then. The aser letzav v'yisham the aser letzud chayv of shebershusu v'im tzadon pater. The Ramah goes on and says that you're not even allowed to capture a chayv oaf that is in your rishus. If you capture it, you would be pater, meaning it would be a din d'rabban, would be a rabbinic prohibition. About para v'sus, if you have a cow and a horse, v'chol shekein shar chayv oaf shemardu, or other things that are rebelling, in sudden chayv chatas, you would be violating a din d'oraisa. V'chein ikr, that's an achatul. A chatul is a cat, so dina kashar chayv asul latafsa b'Shabbos. You are not allowed to be going ahead and capturing a cat over the course of Shabbos. Now, again, these really domesticated cats might not be under these rules anymore. I mean, you know, some people around here have cats. The cat will not leave their house. I've noticed. So that might not mean this is the regular halacha of cats. But the most cat, you know, I'm not even sure he's talking about pet cats. He's talking about, I'm not sure anybody really had pets back then. It's like, you know, your animals. So those things that, so you would not be permitted to capture them, but you would be allowed to nudge them into the right place. Why are you allowed then to walk them, or why then are you allowed to put, right, why is that? So we answered, well, that's for their benefit. That's right. That's something that they won't get hurt. So therefore, we would be allowed to do it so that they don't get hurt. It's for their own benefit. But if it's something that is for our benefit, so it's a problem. So really, to take animals and put them in places where you know, they want to get out, or we have guests and stuff over the course of Shabbos, right? And the guests can't stand the dog. Right, so to take the dog and to conceal it in its cage or something, right? So that seems to be problematic, right? To take something and put it in a cage over the course of Shabbos, right? That seems to be a problem, probably only in Issur D'Rabbanan, but probably not appropriate, right? To let it go outside would be to let it go outside, right? If it's going to be in your yard, it's going to be in your enclosed yard, so certainly it can go outside. Right. So if it's in the basement, the Rav Shlomo Zalman translates. Trapping as artificially containing an animal from where it otherwise would want to go.
You can't close the door on it.
So to close the door on it, maybe when it's not looking, maybe permissible. I mean, if it doesn't realize it, but it's still, I don't know, it's going to be...
It's going to be very tricky because...
There's not a very good way of doing it.
Yeah, because if, for example, they're in a space that's presumably large enough for them to function, then you provide for them in that space,
right,
even if it's not free range.
Right. So that is a problem. There may be maybe one kula coming out. I didn't see it explicitly. I would think it would make sense to me to be a kula. I would add, and also this comes into the most play when it comes to birds. Anybody here bird people? Or I host my friend that was here last week, Phil. So I remember hosting. We one time they went away, so we got the privilege of hosting their bird, and of course. The bird got loose in my room, and I pretty much let it go for all of Shabbos and whatever. But birds are a problem because when you at least I'm not sure I've seen a bird cage in 15 years. But what I recall, there's this to get the food. You're supposed to change the food. You're supposed to change the water once a day, right? So you remove the food and then you close the door and then you change it, right? So that's a problem because if you pulled it open, so now it's open, yes. And now you're closing the door. And you're keeping the bird trapped, right? So the way to do it really is, A, to just stuff the food, not to change it over Shabbos, right? Just stuff food in if you need to stuff food in. Or to somehow manipulate it so that it never actually opens. Right? It would be the same thing in your house, right? If you have a house and the dog wants to get out and you want to leave, so how are you going to do that? In a way, by closing the front door, it's going to be a problem of tzad. So if you can manipulate it so that you open the door, but there's never a way out, right, you get yourself in between and then close it, so that the dog never really had a way to get out of the car, out of the house. So that would be okay.
Can you use that same technique if you put a cat away because someone's allergic to it?
Right, but this that only works for the animals where you want it to be, and you just don't want it to get where you're going. Right. Well. There's not good enough for you to be there. There's no other place I could go. But there might. As I was working through this today, I believe the last part may open up some leniency. So let's get through that.
Somebody's allergic to a cat that's in the house. There's no value in taking it out. It's in the house. So
Christmas.
That's actually not true. That's actually not quite true.
I would assume it depends how allergic you were. That would be my guess. That would be my guess. It depends how allergic you were.
He just can't breathe the air with a cat.
So before we do unwanted business, what's this business about it? Two people?
The two people is a malacha issue. Whenever there's a malacha that's done by two people, so you're not actually violating the malacha. Malacha has to be done by one person for it to be an isidur, right?
So you close the door. Two people.
Well, it's an isidur rabbanan. Now, it could be that it's two, but it's really two different rabbanans. But in last week when we talked about a cholish ein bo sakana, so sometimes you have a situation where we're you got to turn on the humidifier, and there's no non-Jew around, and there's a baby, or whatever. So one of the eitzas that are one of the advices that are given is if the two people push the button together at the same time, right? So then, neither one is directly violating the malacha, right?
Would you be able to pick up an animal if the animal were in danger? In other words, let's say you see something falling and it's going to hit your animal, and you can't stop it. Can you then pick the animal up and move the animal?
Right, so I guess that's our Bali Chaim thing, right? That was our Bali Chaim would override what's
said. Jump on the baby, and you would want to stop the animal. You take out the baby,
right?
Well, then you can't get to the baby.
Well, that for sure. No, that for sure. You even shoot the animal.
What's Shabbos? You're gonna pick up a gun?
I mean, the baby is in.
It's a designated Shabbos gun.
That's where the quarterback comes in.
That's where Michael Vick. You sure you want to post this?
Shh. Not after that line. Okay, so one last thing about unwanted visitors. So the Gemara, so the Shulchan Aruch tells us as well. One more halacha. Kol shemino nitzod chayev alav. Eber mino nitzod pater avalaza. Right, if it's something that is regularly captured, like a deer, something like that. So then you'd be chayev, right? That's when the Yisr steps in. However, it's not something that's not normally captured, so then it's only an Yisr Durabanim. Okay, it's only an Yisr Durabanim, right? So something that's, so for example, right, like a bug, I don't know, things that are not a mouse. Bees, if it's not a honey, some suggest a honeybee might be a problem, but bees or wasps or hornets or all those kinds of things, right? So then it's only an Yisr Durabanim. Hilka, therefore, Zvuvim. flies. Even though it's not something that's normally captured, you're not supposed to capture them over the course of Shabbos. He adds in this little din here, you shouldn't even close a drawer if there are bugs there, or like close the top of something if you know there's an animal in it on Shabbos. There's going to be captured. There's some that are made, that if you, as soon as you open the drawer, it's going to get out right away, so then it's not even captured if it's in the drawer. Okay, whatever. But the main halacha, the Shulchan Aruch is telling us, right, if it's a bee or something, or animals that are not normally captured, is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. So Issur D'Rabbanan, sometimes we have the right to violate. So the Shulchan Aruch gives us one of those examples. Hatzad Nechashim B'Shabbos. If one captures Nechashim on Shabbos, Oshar Ramashim Hamazikim Im L'Refua Chayiv. Right? You actually capture them, a snake, or Ramashim are... Right, some crawling things that damage, but you're imler fu, if you're capturing them, this is like wild to get, you know, to get the healing, to use them for refuah, so you're purposely trying to catch them, so that's an issur d'oraisa, right, that you're not allowed to do, because apparently these are regularly captured, right, these were things that people, you know, would normally do. However, v'im bishvil shelo yishkenu, mutter. If it's that they don't bite you, it would be permissible. Right? So why is it permissible if they won't bite you? So is it because it's a matter of life and death? It's a matter of, because it's really right. So we had this right in Phoenix. So we had scorpions, right? We actually had scorpions in our house, and in fact there was a guy once who stayed not our house. He stayed at a friend's house. A guy from a fellow from Teaneck. And this fellow really had scorpions. And this fellow, when he was packing up his bag to leave, right before he closed the thing, a scorpion crawled out of his bag. So I'm thinking, like, imagine, like, the scandal, like, scorpions arrive in Teaneck, New Jersey, and start, like, getting around to, like,
never go back there.
Trying to. So, but yeah, we actually had scorpions in our home. So everybody told us, as soon as you see them, you're allowed to kill them right away. Well, we did a little research. In fact, before we bought the house, we did a little bit of research, because there was actually a dead scorpion when we looked at the house originally, like in the drain. So we did a little bit of research, and apparently the last time somebody had been killed by a scorpion bite in the state of Arizona was like 1950 or something like that. So to really say that it's a matter of life and death is a little bit problematic. But is that it? That means I'm not allowed, like, what am, so it's not a matter of life and death? So the Mishnah says, no. Even if the snake's not going to kill you, right? And it's not going to run after you. It's going to stay where it is. To go ahead and kill them. Right? You're not supposed to go ahead and kill them. About how to capture them would be permissible. Right? To put a kli on them. Or it sounds like to tie them. That's what the word means. It must mean in a net. I don't know. To tie the snake? Like, it can't be. Right? Kosher a son, or to like trap them. That time, the reason is because the idea of why is trapping prohibited? Trapping is prohibited in the Mishkan because you wanted the animal to use for something. So I'm trapping the animal, so I want to keep it away from me. So we call that a malacha she'in tzricha l'gufa, and a malacha that we're doing that's not for its real purpose, and that's probably only an issur d'rabbanan. I don't want to capture it. El shelo yishchen, I just don't want it to bite me. If I know that it will stay there and it won't damage me, lo hayatzad, it wouldn't be capturing. We assume that it's pater aval aser midrabanan v'hach mishum hazeik, because of the damage, afilu yisad rabanan leika, the yisad rabanan would therefore fall away. So he says, because there's a fear of the damage, and it's only an issur d'rabbanan, so I'm afraid it's going to bite me. Right? If it bites me, it might not kill me, but it could hurt a lot. Right? That's what we heard about scorpions. It will hurt a lot for half a day. That's what we were told. So you'd be allowed to capture it. You should maybe not necessarily kill it, because it might not, whatever, but to capture it would be permissible. The Sefer here, the Rabbi Rubia Sefer, not necessarily known for its leniencies, goes on and says, so this doesn't necessarily have to hold true that an animal is about to bite you and really hurt you. But if the animal is really, really bugging you, such that, not, no pun intended, the animal is really being annoying, for example, in a sukkah. So he recommends the first thing you should do in a sukkah is try to put some really, like, open up a cold bottle of soda, like 20 feet away from the sukkah, and that way the bugs will go there. So let's say, I think his line is, if the bugs have already like made them, what was his line? I love the way he wrote it. If the unwelcome bees are already inside the sukkah and show no intentions of leaving, one may then cover them with a cup or a bowl if one feels threatened by them. Meaning, even if you know you're not threatened by them, or it's like a bee, don't worry, if you don't bother them, they won't bother you. So like, yeah, but if it's like within 5 inches of my face, right, it's going to be kind of hard for me not to, right? So he says in here that he thinks that it would then be permissible. So personally, I'm not sure why that should be any different than if you have like somebody that comes to the house that's going to be driven crazy for the entire day by a dog to keep the dog away. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it inside, so I'm afraid to say that it's totally permissible, right? You heard that? I haven't said it's totally permissible. but that's my thought, is that I'm not sure why it should necessarily be different. Yes?
So what about those containers that are usually glass containers that you put outside the sukkah?
Yeah.
And you put apple juice in it and for the bugs.
Great idea. Put it out before Yontif.
Go into it.
Right.
Sure.
Somehow they can't find their way out.
Right.
But it is open.
You have to put it out before Yontif, though.
Right.
Right.
But say a Yontif is a Shabbos.
Put it out before Shabbos or Yontif.
Right, but I'm saying the bees can go in.
Right.
Are we trapped?
But I'm not doing anything. It's there. Let it could do whatever it wants.
They don't go out. But
I don't have. I understand. I don't have to remove the. I don't have to remove traps for Shabbos. The traps out. The traps out. I'm not allowed to set a trap on Shabbos.
Yeah.
Right. But if it's set out already before, set
and that's
out
really
before.
The question here, right?
I mean, I don't know.
You're talking about things where you are setting out something, but it's on Shabbos already. If you
this
were,
is on Shabbos, right?
Yes.
So I'm sitting in my sukkah, or Yontif, right? I'm sitting on my sukkah, and the bugs there, and it's the flies driving my kids, and the bees driving me nuts, right? So I'd be so he says that he thinks that's enough. That's considered enough tsar to capture it, and even that capturing, you realize, is really only a temporary thing. Meaning, you're capturing in a cup, and then it will get out probably afterwards. Yeah.
So, but there's certain bugs that are unwanted that you can't capture. You have to kill them. I mean, in other words, flies and mosquitoes, they can't really be captured. So how do they fit into that?
Flies and mosquitoes can't be captured.
Yeah, you certainly can't capture
a mosquito. Right.
You can kill it.
You capture it.
So instead of hitting it
with
something, you use a cup.
The mosquitoes. So if the mosquito really is dangerous, so yeah, then it would be. Then right. I remember that was like the big news, right? When the West Nile virus came out, everybody said you should go ahead and kill all the mosquitoes, right? That on Shabbos, right? That was whatever. I remember that being stated. Here, the bugs. I don't know. You think it's easier to kill a bug than it is to capture a bug?
Well,
the flies.
Swat it with something long or like a towel or a piece of paper that might
kill
the thing, as opposed to like
yeah. So I'd be nervous with that. I'm not sure. I'd be nervous with that because it's first of all, it's a kli hamiyuchad lekach, right? It's a vessel that you're using that's specifically a fly swatter, and
so you have to kill it like with your hand or something.
I'm right now I'm only suggesting to trap it. Temporarily and get it outside the house.
But
you're saying you can't do that.
Yeah, but if you were using,
I don't know, if it's really bothering you. I mean,
if it's
hard for me to imagine this scenario unless your house is overridden with.
One time we had
bugs.
Flies in here,
right? But if
it's
I only need one mosquito and I can get like 5 bites.
Right. So if that's the situation, so it's right. So I would say that you would be able to get out, right? But I think if a person isn't susceptible, right? Then to mosquito bite. I first try to put on some, get mosquitoes away first, and then. But if the scenario is that it would cause mitzar, again, as we pointed out last week, it doesn't have to be tzar on Shabbos, even if the tzar is not going to start till after Shabbos. So yeah, it would be permissible, it's only necessary to Rabban. But you'd have to really build up the tzar. You'd have to make a case how it's really going
to
cause a tzar. Yeah?
Two questions. One, if you trap, say, one of those wasps, if you leave it there long enough, it's probably going to die.
Right. So he says here that he even says that he thinks you don't really have to worry about that. Right. But if you... ideal is to let it go after the meal. That's the ideal.
Second question is, a lot of times there's a wasp that's affecting a bad edit. Is there a part of mutzah?
Is it bad?
It comes back and stings you.
I don't think so.
No, because if you hit it, you're definitely moving it.
So it's like this pushing on.
I think muksa would fall away before the trapping would, anyways. I mean, if it's that kind of scenario. Yeah.
So it's probably enough. Okay. I usually find to go out of it.
What about temporary trapping? Like, say you have a bee and somebody's allergic to bees. Can you trap it within two cups and walk with it? So that's trapping it. So then you're walking outside.
Yeah, so even trap, meaning that even if you're not going to walk out, you're just going to put, at least talking about putting a cup down on your table and, you know, waiting until the end of the meal. So what you're saying is even better. I'm just going to put it here for a minute, and then half a minute, and then I'm going to let it go. And not only that, but if I put in that scenario, you're taking two cups and putting it together, right? So that's not even a trap because you can't really hold it like that for two. I mean, as soon as you put it, there's no way of that lasting forever,
right?
Unless you're going to walk around like this for the rest of your life, right? Because once you put it down, the cups open up and it gets out.
And you walk out the door with it and then let it go. But is that a temporary 1 minute?
Right. So that's even better. But that's not, you know, you have to, maybe you're very good.
I run the other way, but.
All right.